Well, it was the best of times and the worst of times all in the span of the last time you heard us. Welcome back to the Massive Match Day. It's our job to make heads or tails of it. We are presented, as always, by the Land Grant Brewing Company and the Old North Arcade. My name is Chris Lannis. I am your humble host, as always. Nathaniel Marhefka is on the IR with a undisclosed illness. So we've called in a heavy hitter here. Massive Report's own Josh Malott. Got that right?
You got it right. It's good to be here, Chris. I'm our Hector Jimenez. I fill in wherever I need to.
The Swiss Army Knife. Now, is this your debut podcast appearance for us?
This is 2 years. We're just about 2 years that I've been with Massive Report, and this is my first appearance on a podcast. So excited to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. Thank you for filling in on short notice. We've got a lot to get to. The mothership kind of covered breaking down Saturday's game, and they got the fun job. We have the less fun job of trying to figure out just what the heck happened last night. We're recording on Thursday afternoon, so it's still last night at the fray. Kruesi dominate for 80 minutes and then have a full collapse, to use the name of a Thursday record, conceding twice in the last 10 minutes of the match to fall to that team up north by the score of 2-1. What did you think of the match on the whole?
You know, it was I watched it after the fact, and normally I like to watch and not know the result, but in this case I had actually seen the result. So I'm kind of sitting there watching and just wondering how in the world this is all going to fall apart when it's at about 70, 75 minutes and they're still up. You know, I know a lot of people have used the word dominating. I didn't quite feel that it was dominating, but I did feel like it was a comfortable, in a good way, performance. I thought that Toronto started to pull some possession away for a lot of the second half, really. Game state had a lot to do with that, obviously. But in general, I thought there were good things. There were a couple of things that I thought that Columbus was not doing real great. And I think in the end, it kind of came back to haunt them. You know, 18 shots, 6 on frame, and they only put 1 away. And, I know Ralph and I kind of talked about when we were putting together the preview that this is a Toronto team that doesn't need possession and they don't need a lot of chances. And, you know, that played out to a T on Wednesday night.
I got back from Crew SC training about an hour ago now. I got to speak with both Will Trapp and Greg Berhalter. Greg said overall he was pleased with the performance. He said he thought his team did enough to win. He spoke of limiting the Toronto chances. He said that they had pretty much one chance directly after halftime, mm-hmm. and then the goal, and then the second goal. He said that they limited one of the best teams in the league to 3 chances, and that's without Giovinco, it should be noted. But 2 of them went in, and he spoke of the team getting, in his words, a weird mindset in the second half where they weren't really keeping possession that well, and they weren't really looking to kill off the game with a second goal. And that's kind of mind-boggling to me. Nathaniel and I have talked about this on match day quite a bit. Not stepping on the neck, to use a slightly intense way to describe it, not putting games away when they could. Justin Merrim spoke of, after the match, mm-hmm. of possibly, you know, he had that great chance and it would have been lights out, game over. What is the issue with this Crew team that's preventing them from getting these second goals or third goals or whatever they need to kill off the match?
You know, it's really hard to say. I feel the same way, to use the word that Berhalter used. It was weird. It felt like they were kind of hanging there in limbo where they weren't quite, you know, they weren't in a defensive shell, but they also were not, attacking heavily and trying to get that second goal to put it away. They just kind of seemed stuck with Toronto taking some possession away, and you know, in the end it came back to bite them. And I don't know how you change that mindset. It's really hard to say. Now, I thought it was interesting knowing the result. It was about, I want to say, the 70th minute or so. I made a note here. The 70th, 73rd or 74th minute on the television broadcast I was watching, Sika and Burgess actually they start talking about how much better Columbus is this year in not giving up those second half goals and not having a collapses. Now, obviously, they did that once this year, but that was it. It was definitely a recurring issue last year, and you know, knowing how this was going to turn out, I thought it was pretty ironic to hear them say that.
Yeah, it's almost one of those commentator curse situations. But it should be noted that it has been less of an issue this year. Last week I wrote their big issue has been starting slow, you know, conceding the first goal. Somehow they managed against New York City to both concede early and collapse late. That's one for Steve Cirk and his history books, I imagine. But on the whole, not a lot of late collapses this year. So it does kind of give you that creeping dread of not this again, you know. Obviously, Berhalter not being on the sidelines. He was forced to not be – he's not allowed to be in contact. You can't radio, nothing. That could play a part in it, you know, that kind of weird vibe, that weird kind of stuck in limbo-ness. I'm not sure I'm going to buy that as an excuse, and Berhalter did not use that as an excuse today in training at all. That wasn't even brought up. Josh Wolf is going to make some MLS team very happy as a head coach in the near future, I get the feeling, and that staff did – you know, has more than enough quality to get through the game. But I do wonder if the player, you know, just on the player side, if it's somewhere in the back of their mind, they're not seeing Greg, they're not getting that instruction, if that plays a role in it. I do want to point out, you know, you can't single anyone out for a particularly poor performance. You can't single anyone out for a loss. But Alex Crenali has played exceedingly well this year, but this is probably his worst game that he's had. And do you have any takeaways from the rookie center back's performance last night?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on that. I don't know if it was his worst performance. Obviously, a hard tackle and an injury were probably his worst performance a few weeks ago. But, you know, this just, you know, I thought he had some good moments. I thought he was fine for most of the match, but he did have those moments where you kind of see where maybe he was a little bit wide-eyed. Josie gave him a lot of trouble back there. We saw on the play that set up the PK where he just went up for a header and didn't finish the play. It looked like he was maybe looking for some contact that didn't come, and instead he's on the ground and Josie's into the box alone. There was another one later where I thought he did not clear the ball real well. I think he missed an opportunity on a ball over the top that sent Josie in there and created some danger. I think it ended up being a ball across the face of goal that Ricketts didn't quite connect on. You know, I didn't think it was like a constant thing, but I thought there were those moments where you kind of see like, okay, this is a guy who maybe doesn't have all that experience behind him and maybe is chasing the game for a couple of moments here.
Yeah, still in need of some polishing, and I don't think that's a terrible thing to say about a rookie homegrown player who has, you know, impressed pretty much his entire time here. I do want to point out Greg Berhalter today, when asked about Crenali, he praised him quite highly, and he said he thought there was a foul in the lead-up to the penalty. He said Altidore pretty much barreled into him not looking to play the ball before the ball came in that Crenali jumped for. I was watching from home. I didn't see that on the live broadcast. I would have to go back and look. But for those of you who are into going back and rewatching things, something to look out for. Tweet us. Tell us whether or not Greg is accurate in that assessment. Jonathan Mensah had a bit of a horror show on the last goal. Obviously, he's missed some time due to injury, due to suspension. We're about a third of the way through the year. In your opinion, do you think Jonathan Mensah has been worthy of the DP level money stature that comes with that designated player tag?
I'm gonna come at this a couple of different ways. To start, you know, obviously there were some issues on that goal. I'm not convinced that it's totally his fault. I think that the issue was much earlier in the run of play that set up that situation. The defense as a whole was very compact, and they weren't defending the width that Toronto had. That not is not necessarily his fault. He obviously made the decision to step to the ball. I've watched the goal maybe twice, two or three times. I'm not convinced it was the wrong decision. It may have been a better decision not to step to the ball, to be more aware of what was around him. But, you know, he certainly takes some of the blame there. Prior to that, I actually thought that this was one of his better games. I just thought he was solid back there. I thought his distribution was pretty good, which I actually think has been pretty good all year. But to answer your big picture question, you know, I think it's hard not to be a little bit disappointed with what he's done so far this year. When you talk about that DP tag, do I think that he's played at the level of what we expect from a DP center back? Probably not. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, we've seen him make some poor decisions. You know, he's been hit with some cards. Obviously, he was lucky the previous game probably to even still be in the game. And he's had some moments. I'm still trying to figure out exactly who he is and what his strength is that he can play to right now. So for me, it's still kind of a mystery. I have certainly not given up on him, but definitely there's some level of disappointment there just as how the season's gone for him.
Yeah, definitely not advocating giving up on him as a key cog in that defense. I mean, any player who has that kind of international, you know, experience, World Cups, playing in Europe, you know, is obviously going to bring something to the table, even if it's just in, you know, that kind of, I don't want to say teacher role, but you could conceivably make an argument for Alex Cronulli has played better over the course of the season. So I'm interested to see how that kind of unfolds as we get to the kind of log jam in the middle of this this season, although we do have a Gold Cup break this year, so maybe a little less of a log jam than usual. Any final thoughts on the TFC match before we move on to the heart of the program, previewing the Saturday's match? Quick turnaround.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just kind of hit on a couple of notes that I made. I think this was generally a good match that was even if you want to call it failing to kind of put a stranglehold on things and have that killer instinct, I think this match was lost on missed opportunities earlier on in the game when they had the bulk of the possession. And I think it was derailed by, you know, two mistakes that led to goals. And, you know, early in the game, even when they had possession, I didn't think that Crew SC was playing with enough width. I thought they were pretty narrow, and they weren't playing with urgency, moving the ball left to right quickly. And I think that's kind of where they failed to break down Toronto. They were playing with, you know, five guys in the back, sitting back on the road. Obviously, they were not looking to open the game up at all, and that's tough to break down. And from my perspective, I thought that Columbus was maybe a little narrower than it should have been, didn't get the ball out wide enough, didn't move it quickly enough. And I think you see the juxtaposition with how Toronto scored those two goals. Both of them came quickly. Both of them came with quick balls wide that Raheem Edwards put into the box right away. And they got that left to right, to, you know, back to the middle movement very quickly, and it paid off on that second goal. You know, you're getting the back line running at goal with the ball whipped in. It's tough to defend. You know, I think that was really the difference. So for me, I think Columbus could have done more with their possession earlier if their ball movement had been a little bit more pointed. There were moments of it, certainly. I thought Pipa had a good game. And there, you know, Justin had some good moments on the ball as well. But as a whole, I thought not wide enough, not urgent enough, kind of getting things forward. And for
how
me,
how big of a miss is Harrison Awful for this team?
You know, I think from that perspective, he is a big miss. I mean, he certainly provides width, and he's played a little bit differently this year than he has in the past, or I guess last season. You know, they've asked him to do things a little bit differently, some small tweaks. We've seen him cut inside a little bit more often. So already his role is a little bit different, but I think generally speaking, you do get more of that width from him.
Berhalter today was asked, actually I asked him, for an update on Harrison. Harrison is, there's no injury, nothing like that, nothing untowards. He is spending time at home with the wife and the new baby. Family comes first, so that's where Harrison is. Berhalter did not have an update to give us as to his availability for this weekend. He neither positively or negatively had any sort of update. So your other thought?
My other thought is, I hate to pile on a guy, but I thought that Muhammad Abu made mistakes on both those goals that really set them up. And I think it goes overlooked a little bit because they happen early in the setup and the buildup. And everybody kind of looks at, well, you know, who's not making the tackle at the last minute or who's getting beat at the last minute. But for me, on that first goal, Abu missed the tackle on Vasquez. Vasquez turned off him into space, and that really started everything. You know, he was able to run at the defense and keep them compact, which let him find Edwards out wide, totally unmarked. And the, you know, one touch cross back in, Ricketts floats perfectly into the space that's left and puts it away. And then the second goal, you know, early in that buildup, Abu puts a ball forward. I don't remember who he was looking for, but it wasn't really a great ball. He doesn't slide it into space in the midfield. He doesn't put it over the top. He hits it kind of just right at a waiting TFC, gives the ball up there in the midfield, and they immediately turn around. I think after that, it took them two passes to move the ball from the right side of the field to the left, and there's Edwards again taking one touch on the ball and hitting a cross in, and there you go. So for me, you know, I know we've been very critical of Abu, and I thought for 70 or 75 minutes it was his most solid performance of the year, probably, just because he was very quietly doing his work in the midfield. His positioning was pretty good. And, you know, he always completes a high rate of passes. That's not been an issue all year. He moves the ball well. He distributes the ball well. And he completes a high percentage of passes. That's not the issue. The issue is that... for me, it's been the couple of times that he's let down. He doesn't track back as hard as he should, or he, you know, creates a turnover in the midfield that causes some problems. So for me, it came back to those couple of moments. Again, as much as I hate to pile on a guy who has already taken his share of criticism.
You know, I think it really just illustrates that holding midfield role, that defensive midfielder role, is probably the most vital key in Berhalter's system. He's the key cog, and even little things like that in the buildup of plays, you know, not necessarily the big obvious ones, it really just illustrates how vital that role is. And, you know, I agree that for a guy who's kind of been stop-start, he's had some trouble settling in. He's had some appearances where he just didn't look like he was on the same page. And, you know, we've made a lot, Nathaniel and I have talked a lot about how he's playing a different role than he's conventionally been asked in his previous years, but we're starting to get to the point where if he's not figuring it out, it's time to look elsewhere, I think. And that's not a knock on him, very nice guy, got some real good qualities, but I'm not sure they're the qualities that are required to play the role he would play on this team. So it's not necessarily saying he's not a good player, but he might not be a good fit for this system. And that's something we've seen with other players Berhalter has brought in. Quality is there, but not necessarily a fit for the way Greg wants to play.
I agree. And I think it's just trying to figure out what kind of player he is. When you look at him, he's not adding a physical element. It's more about ball movement and transition. And so I end up asking the question, based on what we've seen from him, does he make the crew better than Mohamed Saeed did? And there you had a guy that at least was already in the system and was familiar with that, so you don't have kind of that settling in period. So I'm not saying that Saeed is or was better. For me, it's just kind of a question that I run through my mind occasionally.
Well, that I think is fair. Anything else on the TFC game before we move on?
Nah, we'll move along and keep things looking forward. No reason to dwell on this loss.
That is certainly what Greg Berhalter wanted to do. He he was very focused on this upcoming game against the Impact, not a team Crew SC have had much success going to play, not very much success in Montreal. Greg was asked about that, and he wisecracked, well, it's a language thing. So obviously joking there, but it's a tough trip to make, although the Impact have perhaps been the most disappointing team in MLS to start this season as far as expected performances versus the reality. Obviously, they've got Piatti, who is a fantastic player. He's their leading goal scorer. But just two wins on the year so far for the Montreal side. What do you expect to see out of this one?
You know, for me, Montreal has kind of been on a downward trend since maybe the first third or first half of last season, where they came out so well, and they were just this exciting counter-attacking team that, you know, even though they sit back and try to hit you on the break, it was never like a kick-and-rush style. It's always moving the ball quickly and getting it in, you know, to the feet of Ignacio Piatti, who's just, you know, he's one of the best playmakers in the league and one of the best attackers in the league, probably top three or four. So for me, I mean, they've been sliding downward a little bit, and I think their style of play is actually a little bit different than it was when they were most successful. They've been dealing with a ton of injuries. You have to remember that they were without Piatti for a few games this year, at least two, possibly more. I don't remember exactly, and they were just, they had no soul without Piatti on the field. It's just a totally different team. And that certainly hurt them. On top of that, they get him back, and Mateo Mancosu, who pretty much almost single-handedly made Didier Drogba expendable, although I think Didier had some part in that himself. But Mancosu filled his shoes. He's good on the break. He is kind of a dynamic kind of attacker who moves well in space, but he can also hold up the ball a little bit, and he finished well. And he's injured. He won't be with the team. He's missed, basically two games. He went down early in the Vancouver game 2 weeks ago, I think. And so that's a big blow. And then on the back line, where they've really struggled this year, for one, they don't have Donny Toya anymore, who is a fixture back there at outside back for a while. He's no longer with them. And they had an injury back there too with Victor Cabrera at center back. And, you know, Lauren Simon and Cabrera really formed a tough partnership there that kind of gave them their defensive spine and allowed them to be a team that sat back and countered. Well, now they've got, I believe he's a rookie, Kyle Fisher, I believe, at center back. And you know, less experience. They're not as stout back there. They're shipping some goals they shouldn't. To throw some numbers at you, I think they've got the worst expected goal differential in the league. They're struggling to you know, keep balls out, and then that kind of messes with their whole setup. So I mean, you know, they've got a lot of issues right now, but I think they still can be dangerous on any given day.
Have you gotten a chance to watch them very much this year? My usual match day or massive match day recording day ritual of watch as many condensed MLS live games as I can went out the window because I was covering practice today, so I did not get to see much of them this year.
Yeah, I caught them a little bit earlier in the year, and then kind of getting prepped for this week, I watched their last two games, almost all of them. Like I said, they've changed a little bit. You know, what made them exciting before was that even when they countered, it was still working the ball through the midfield, or I should say probably through the outside backs, creating some fulcrums for them and getting the ball to Piatti. And it's changed a little bit. I'm looking through my notes here. They can't find the number on me now, but they actually are among the league leaders now in long balls per game, which was, you know, not necessarily a part of their game before. So that's changed a little bit, and that has to do with personnel as well. Obviously, Dominic Aduro plays a bigger role with Mancosu out, And so they try to use his speed. They've got a young guy up top in Anthony Jackson Hamel. I'm not sure how that's pronounced. Don't know if he'll start. Hasn't necessarily started since Mancosu goes down, but you know he provides a guy up top that's you know he's kind of a physical athletic guy who you know can kind of find those lanes and be a target for them. And then, I mean, for them, the biggest thing is that they have this kid, Balu Tabla, who is, I think, a homegrown, and I think he's still 18 years old, and he's really added a lot to their attack. He loves to dribble at guys and get the ball at his feet. I think they're figuring out where the best spot is for him. I've seen, you know, against Vancouver, he played out on the wing. And against DC United last week, he actually played in that central attacking role, that typical number 10 spot. And I'm not sure that's really where he's suited because he doesn't connect a lot with his teammates, but he definitely likes to dribble at guys and you know, go at defenders 1v1. So that's kind of what you look at there. You know, they're going to be pretty direct. They're going to, like I said, they try to stop the ball, funnel it out wide through their fullbacks. And kind of their hidden weapon is Ambrose Ayungo, their left back, who I think a lot of fans may know his name. He kind of broke through with the Red Bulls a couple years ago. He's been in Montreal a couple years now. And he really, really will get up that flank, especially at home when they're going to be, you know, playing some more attacking soccer and trying to go for that win. I expect to see him flying up that left flank and really getting into the attacking third. I think he leads the team in actually percentage of touches. I think he's actually fifth in the league among starters. Or I take that back. He might be third. No, he's fifth among MLS starters in touch percentage. And if you look at the guys around him, you're talking about Dax McCarty, Nico Ladero. You're talking about guys that run the attack and yeah. Run possession. And we're talking about a left back here for Montreal that's doing that. So you're going to, you know, I think we're going to see them. They'll probably not sit back quite as much at home, but they're still going to likely cede some possession, try to create that space, and then move the ball up the flanks through their fullbacks and try to hit on the break like that, especially with Aduro and his speed.
So playing imaginary coach, hypothetical coach for a minute, we're gonna assume Ethan Finley is starting on the right wing, just because he's kind of the guy. You know, obviously with squad rotation, could see someone else. But for the sake of this argument, we're going to say it's Ethan Finley. And we're going to say Harrison Offal stays at home, still on family leave. So thus far at right back this year, we've seen Hector Jimenez, Josh Williams, and then you've also got the youngster Maloney on the roster. And with this dangerous attacking wing play that we're expecting to see, who do you want starting at right fullback for Crew SC in the absence of Harrison Offal, assuming he doesn't go?
You know, that's a tough one because my initial response would be Yuker Aitala. But we also have to consider that Waylon Francis, if I'm not mistaken, has gone a full 90 minutes in both games this week. I could be wrong about that. Did Waylon go the full game? And he's played a lot. I know that he's played a lot of minutes this week, so he might be a candidate to get rotated out on Saturday. And then it's a question of, well, who do you put on the left? And then the obvious answer would be Raitala, which then kind of leaves that spot on the right open again. So it's hard to say. I know my answer is not Connor Maloney. One thing that they do, and if you kind of look at what they tried to do 2 weeks ago against Vancouver, is they sent a lot of balls into that left wing and that left corner. And with the way Ayungo affects the games, I would not want a rookie with a handful of minutes being responsible for clearing things out of that corner. So I think that's a big factor there, and you almost wonder if that sets up another three-man back line again just because of the situation at fullback. But I guess we'll see.
You know, it is a very interesting idea because Yuker Aitala has played right fullback in the past. He is very, very adept with both feet. And Greg Berhalter today, actually, I asked, what does Waylon Francis bring to the table for you that Ayuka Raitala doesn't? And Greg spoke about his precision and crossing and just experience in the system, putting over, you know, Waylon. But he also mentioned, this is a direct quote from him, Waylon and Yuka are in a battle for that left back spot. Those were his, that's a quote. So it doesn't sound like Yuka would be in the conversation for that right back spot. But then again, this is Greg Berhalter we're talking about here. He is, to say he plays it close to the vest would be an insult to Stoics everywhere. You don't get anything Greg doesn't want you to get. So
you mean he's not going to tell us exactly what he's going to do?
Greg won't even tell you exactly what he has already done. He'll tell you to go watch the tape and figure it out. You can ask Pat about that one. So offensively, you just spoke about rotation and you know, short turnaround yet again, third game in what, 8 days. We got to bring it up. Kakuta Mane.
Yeah, I think we have to see him.
He appears to be below Nico Hansen on the depth chart.
He does.
And you know, and that is a coach's prerogative. They've had longer with Nico Hansen. Nico Hansen has had some flashes of real skill. But Kakuta Mane is a proven asset in MLS. He has been a contributor over the last couple of years in MLS. So what are your thoughts? Where are you at on the hashtag free Kakuta Mane train, or are you still kind of let's wait and see?
Well, look, I definitely I have some questions about it. I'm not one of the people that's declaring this a total mess or a wasted trade or anything like that. The bottom line is he's doing the same thing Tony Chani was, which is not playing. So from that standpoint, you gave up a little bit of cash. He has been in the 18, and I think we've had a weird kind of setup of game states and situations where maybe normally we would have seen him come on as a sub, and it just didn't set up for that. Obviously, you know, last night, Wednesday, you're in a game where you're probably not looking to bring him on. And hey guys, it's Josh. Sorry about this interruption, but my 5-year-old son walked into the room while we were recording and kind of disrupted that process. So I went back in there, cut that out, and now we are going to get back to your regularly scheduled podcast. Yeah, I think we may have seen him against Toronto, but you know, we are in a situation where they were looking for probably more defensive subs, more possession type subs, until it was, you know, at the very end and it was too late. There wasn't really a situation to bring him in. I think that's happened a few times where we would have seen him and it just didn't work out. So I think the fact that he's not starting, obviously he hasn't figured things out to Greg's liking yet. But I think the fact that we just flat out haven't really seen him on the field is kind of just a confluence of strange events. So I'm not ready to panic yet. I think there's certainly a long way to go this season. I think he will have his say at some point on the field. And, I mean, this situation obviously seems ripe to bring him in. Ethan has played a lot of minutes this week. And, you know, he's put in a lot of hard work. I thought he put in a lot of hard work against Toronto, especially as a wingback where he's got to get up and down all the way here. He can't hedge his bets. So he's put in a lot of minutes. Justin's put in a ton of minutes. We saw him come off very late against Toronto, but not really enough to save much legs. So I think there's opportunity for rotation on both wings, to be quite honest with you. I want to say I'll be shocked not to see Mane against Montreal, but I guess, like you kind of said, you know, this is Greg. He likes to be loyal. He's notoriously slow warming up to guys trying to figure out the system. So I guess I wouldn't bet any money on it. Right. But I also wouldn't be shocked to see both Hansen and Mane in the starting 11, honestly. So, yeah, that's kind of where I stand on it. I think we'll definitely see them both at some point in the game.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist. There are some amongst the crew faithful who are. But even I am getting to the point where if we don't see Kakuta and Mane out there for what I would consider a reasonable amount of time to have an influence on a game. You know, I think he was out there for 9 minutes in his debut, something like that. If he's not out there for some, I don't want to say extended, because, you know, then you start thinking about 90 or 60 minutes to an hour. But if he's not out there for a reasonable amount of time to influence a game, barring some sort of really strange confluence of events, but even then, with 3 games in 8 days, if he's not out there, I'm coming around to the idea that something's up. I was at training today. He was out training with, you know, everyone else. Most of the starters who played last night were just doing fitness things inside. Mm-hmm. They weren't in the small-sided game. Kakuta Mane was. He was part of all the drills. He was one of the last 2 players off the field because he was doing extra drills. So he's not an outcast. This is not a situation where the guy's not at training, where the guy is, you know, whatever rumors are going on out there that he's some sort of outcast, that Greg's brought him here just to languish on the sidelines or whatever. That's not the case. I saw with my own 2 eyes. He was out there. He was putting in the work. But for some reason, it's just not come together for him yet. It still could, obviously. But if we don't see him for a decent look, you know, this weekend, I got to think that there is something more to it than, well, he's not ready. You know, fitness is a concern. He doesn't have the system. If he doesn't have the system well enough by now, is he going to get the system?
Yeah, that's certainly a question. And again, you know, there's certain ways that Saturday could go where, you know, if the plan was to bring him off the bench, you know, maybe pull Finley out after, you know, 50 or 60 minutes because he's had so much on his legs and bring Kakuta on, and maybe there's a weird situation in the game where it doesn't make sense or whatever. There are different scenarios where I could look at it in hindsight and say, okay, but generally speaking, you know, I agree with you. This is a situation where normally you'd be looking to that wing depth to help you here, and you've got a guy who obviously is talented and obviously has turned some heads in MLS before, even if he, you know, is not a finished product. And you kind of have a situation that's ripe for him to get some time. So I agree, if we don't see him, it's going to be strange. And there's certainly some questions about, well, you know, some guys just never feel comfortable in certain situations. And if we're, I don't know how long ago the trade was. Like, we're at least, what, 6 weeks into it at this point?
I think it's about 6 weeks, yeah.
So, you know, 6 weeks, even if the guy doesn't have every little thing down pat, you got guys on the field that are your starters that are making mistakes too. So, you know, there's definitely a question. If he doesn't see an extended run out, you have to wonder about what's going on and whether he's ever going to quite click at the level necessary.
This is one I usually lob to Nathaniel. I think you probably already gave us your take on this, but feel free to surprise me if you must. What's the key battle in this game? Where is this one going to be won and lost positionally?
You know, I think it's going to be won and lost positionally in the midfield, honestly. When you look at the midfield that Montreal has, they've got a lot of older legs. Bernadello's not a young guy. Donadel has been around for a long time. He's not a young guy. Patrice Bernier is about 100 years old. And good on him for still performing at that age. But, you know, he is not a young guy. And, you know, we're going to see probably 2, if not 3 of those guys starting for Montreal in the midfield. So for me, the battle is won there. You know, I think Crew SC should win the possession battle anyway. So I think they've got to be smart. They've got to do better with their horizontal ball movement. They have to be wide, I think, stretch that midfield, make them use those legs. because I think that they can be worn down. I think that when they do, we can look for them to maybe make some mistakes. Some of those guys have been known to maybe get into some tackles they shouldn't, which might happen if they're a little bit tired and chasing plays. So for me, that's where it's going to be won. If you're going to have possession, you have to use it well. And in this case, I think a big part of using it well will be to stretch that midfield, to tire them out, and to be able to use that to kill off the game, I think. This was a game where at the start of the week, I was actually thinking it might be better off to save a lot of the player rotation for Saturday. You know, theoretically, you're at home against Toronto. Toronto's a very good team. But for me, you have to get those points at home. So you go with a fuller lineup at home against Toronto. Obviously, that did not work out. But I think you're going into a situation where it's on the road. And as much as you want 3 points, I think you have to be happy with any kind of points. So you go in against a team that's had its struggles on the road where you're satisfied to walk away with a point. And I think that's a good spot to get some player rotation in. And, see how some guys can impact the game. But for me, it's a midfield and the width, I think. Watching Montreal play against Vancouver 2 weeks ago is kind of interesting because I watched Montreal play Vancouver and DC United, two teams that do not play anything like Columbus is going to play. So yes. It's sometimes hard to figure out, well, how is this going to, apply on Saturday? But, Vancouver, I saw have a lot of success creating some danger with crosses. And that's certainly something that Columbus has not done as much this year, but has in the past. We know they have wingers that can, get those crosses in, the fullbacks, get some overlaps, and try to create some things that way. I think that can create some opportunities for them attacking-wise. And like I said, move that midfield, use the ball movement to tire those guys out and be able to control the game.
Well, that is definitely, most games come down to the midfield in one way or the other. I'm still going to go with what you dropped on us when we first started talking about this. I think the wings are going to go a long way to determining this one. Crew SC's wingbacks or fullbacks rather, because I doubt we'll be going with the back three again. Not that we really went with it in the last game. It was on paper a back three, but they played a back four for pretty much 80 minutes of it. So the fullbacks, how they're going to deal with not only the creative wingers, the speedy dribbling wingers of Montreal, but also, as you pointed out, they're very good play from the left back position. I think the outside game is really going to determine this, both offensively and defensively. As you said, Montreal seemed prone to giving up good looks on crosses. Historically, Crew SC have shown that they can make that a real weapon. So I think it's really going to come down to who can control, A, the pace of the game, and B, who wins the battles on the wings. Because with Abu likely the holding midfielder, unless Nico Ness is back in there, it's really hard to talk about this stuff because we just don't know what Greg's going to throw out there. In previous years, we have a really good idea week in, week out, what we're going to see from Greg Berhalter's team. This year, that is the complete opposite. We really don't know what we're going to get lineup-wise or tactically, but assuming we see a fairly conventional lineup from Crew SC, which I think is fairly likely, rotation be damned, because this is now a very needed game and you go back to what you know. I think the wings are going to be kind of where the war is won or lost.
Yeah, I mean, it'll definitely be critical. And I think part of that too will be, not just defending it in your own third, but I think they're going to have to be able to cut off some of that service and some of that those outlets to the wings. Because like I said, they're going to play a lot moving the ball out of the back and getting it to those fullbacks to push up the field. Mm-hmm. Both sides, they like to get up the field. So, some of it's going to be stopping that before they're getting into the attacking half. And cutting off those outlets there, so because that'll totally disrupt what they want to do, and you take away half of what they do. The other half is getting it to Piatti. So if you take away half of that already, you know, you're at least ahead of the game a little bit. And then you hope that you can stay in front of Nacho and not make those killer turnovers and mistakes that he'll kill you on.
Yeah, boy, it's never a bad thing to win the ball high up the pitch. And you know, listening to you describe some of the keys here, boy, if we had a player like that Artur kid healthy and ready to play, he'd be really, really useful on this one, it sounds like.
Yeah, I actually have in my notes, it was one of the first things I wrote down, that man, if he can get back on the field for this one, I think what he does totally plays in to you know, how this game will play out. I think it would be a huge boost, not just from the standpoint of, you know, if you think he's the best option in that spot, but also from the way he plays the game, the way he's going to buzz around that midfield. I think that he could do a lot of good work, and I think he would be a huge coup if they could get him on the field. From, you know, what I've heard from the latest comments about him, sounds like it's possible, but it also kind of sounded like, well, maybe not quite yet. So we'll see, I guess. I mean, we're not gonna find out from Greg. So
right, I was there for those latest comments. He was out at training today. He was in the small-sided game. He had the club cast on his arm, and I was surprised at the degree of physicality he was showing. He was competing for balls. He was muscling, you know. I believe it was Christian Martinez or Dilly Duke. I think it was Martinez going for a ball, and I was surprised. He didn't look 100%, but he looked better than I expected him to. We asked Greg, I think it was Andrew from the Dispatch, asked Greg about Artur's availability, and it was a kind of non-answer. Mm-hmm. It was, he's coming along. Greg said they expected it to be a 3-5 game sort of what he was missing, and we're right in the middle of that, he said. So he didn't rule him out, but he didn't really give any indications that he thought it was going to happen. And to be honest, from what I saw today, I would be surprised. Obviously, yeah. I haven't been going to training long. I'm not an expert, but it didn't seem to be time yet. So it would be great. I would be thrilled. But I don't consider it like, I think Kakuta's more likely to play than Artur is. So
that's saying a lot.
That is saying a lot. All right. So it's that time to go on the record prediction for Montreal Impact v Columbus Crew Soccer Club.
Before we do that, I have a question for you, something that we've not discussed yet that I think is kind of the elephant in the room right now.
Oh, I missed an elephant in the room. Oh, God.
Yeah. There's no way Pipa plays this game, right? He's got to rest.
Who do you play instead of
exactly
him?
That's my question. you almost have to change the setup and almost have to go away from that 4-2-3-1, I think. I mean, okay, this is, in my mind, so the obvious answer is Miram, right? I mean, he's going to do the job that Higuain would do, but
I
mean, in my mind, he's also a guy that's could use a little bit of rest as well, but you may be forced to, I don't know. But to me, at his age, and I'm sure Federico would tell you something different, but to me, with the way that you have to make it through the grind of an MLS season, I mean, to play him for three games in 8 days right now, it doesn't seem like the wisest decision. Not saying that he's, you know, his legs are going to fall off in the 70th minute on Saturday, but, you know, I think you need to have some big picture long-term planning. And for me, you know, he's got to get a little bit of rest somewhere. So, and when you're going into a place against a team that's, you know, ninth in the East and maybe isn't firing on all cylinders, I don't know when there's a better opportunity to rest the guy than right now.
That is a fair and probably accurate point. I'm not entirely sure Justin Merrim is going to be one of the guys who really needs the rest.
Yeah.
Early on in the season especially, but even this past match last night, Berhalter and company have a tendency to pull him with 30, 25, 20 minutes still to play, you know, out of the main four attacking options. I feel like Miram is usually the one to be subbed off. You know, Finley was sat for a game earlier in the year and Hansen started. Hansen's come on for Finley once or twice, but I feel like over the bulk of Berhalter's tenure, Miram has usually been off around the hour to 70, 75 minute mark. And there have been a few times that's happened this year. So out of the big four, I'd say Miram might need the rest the least. So that may make him the not just de facto guy you put in, but the best choice. Outside of Miram, your options are really Christian Martinez and Dilly Duca, which no disrespect to either of those guys, but they're not Federico Higuain. They're not Justin Miram, you know. Dilly Duca, we haven't seen much, if at all, this season. Christian Martinez, same. Martinez, creative, kind of tricky sort of central midfield player. He played out on the wings a lot last year, but they see him in that kind of Higuain role. And Duca, and this isn't a knock on the guy, I just don't see it with Duca.
I don't either. To me, he's just a guy, you know. He's got the experience. He's a veteran. He's got that going for him, but...
He works very hard. I think that's more what he brings. He's going to chase every ball. He's going to chase every runner. He's going to close down. And I think that's something teams need. But I see him as a late legs guy, if anything else, to come and give the team a lift. You know, if they're protecting a lead, come in, chase down, close down. I honestly hadn't even... Until you brought it up, I didn't even consider it because Higuain's like the first name on my team sheet. You yep. know, he was kind of locked in, but long-term planning, you're dang. I
mean, it's a tough one because this team plays very differently when he's not on the field. He's so important just to the rhythm of the game for Columbus.
He is the metronome. He sets that rhythm.
Yeah, there absolutely.
No rhythm without him.
And, assuming that there's not going to be wholesale changes and a totally different approach to the game, because we've never seen that out of Greg, even when he, you know, does what we consider a massive tactical shift in the Berhalter era, it's really kind of variations on a theme. So you know, I don't really see major changes. So you know, I would say there's a good chance that. That we see Pipa sit though, and we see Justin take over that role. Now, whether he takes it over from the left wing or whether he moves centrally is another question. He, you know, he cuts inside and is inverted so much anyway. But you know, where he's starting from is the question mark, I guess. But I agree. I think Justin will probably start, and I think he's gonna be the guy that. Acts as that creative playmaker. I think Higuain's got to sit. I think it's the smart decision, even if it ends up backfiring on Saturday. I think long run, it's the way to go.
Well, by the time you folks hear this, I will likely have either be at or have been to another crew training. So check in on Twitter because I will ask Greg Berhalter his thoughts on just who may be. Needing that rest. I doubt I'll get much of an answer, but I'm going to ask. For the record, Greg's a very nice guy. We always talk and joke a little about him not giving us anything, but he, besides the typical Raz the new guy stuff, he's actually been, you know, he's a cool guy. He's all right. He's all right. Don't let the sternness fool you. All right, Josh. So now, unless there's another elephant I missed, moment of truth, prediction.
Oh, boy. I'm terrible at predictions, and I did not prepare myself to make a prediction. So
you know we do this every week.
We do this every week, but here's the thing. I feel fairly comfortable that whatever I say right now may be very different from what I send in for a prediction to actually post on Massive Report. So,
well, that's tradition, too. There was a week where I changed three times. I said one thing on the mothership, one thing on here. Sent in a prediction to Murphy and then sent in a second prediction, canceling out my first. So it's tradition. Go for it.
I think that it is so hard to win on the road in MLS. And I say that with Columbus coming off three-game home stretch in which they let points get away on two different occasions. But that's the anomaly, I think. That's not how things typically work. At the same time, I'm trying to stay positive and optimistic about things. So I'll kind of hedge my bets and go with a, I'll say a 1-1 draw on the road. I personally would be satisfied with that. I think at this point, you had a kind of a disappointing home stand, but that, you know, just get things moving in the right direction. To me, if you get some player rotation, you're able to rest 2 to 3 guys that you're going to really need down the stretch and still get a point on the road, I'll take that. So I'll say 1-1 draw on the road with and that's without Pipa. So there you go.
Every time I think I get a bead on who this Crew SC team is, who they are as where they're at right now, I guess, is more what I'm trying to say. Every time I think I get a bead on that, they throw a curveball in. I see them, you know, they have a big winning streak, and I'm like, oh, wow, this team could be for real. Then they crap the bed twice in a row against the two New York teams. But then they have a really good performance to answer that, and so I'm feeling very optimistic. This team is pretty good. And then they collapse late. The inconsistency early days for this Crew team, and inconsistency even within the same match, starting slow and finishing strong, starting slow, rallying well, and then collapsing, starting okay, and then collapsing. I cannot, for the life of me, week in, week out, even with the same lineup, gauge which Crew team's going to come out, not knowing how much rotation we're going to see, not knowing, you know, whether or not Harrison Offal is even going to be available. It's really hard to make a prediction. So I've just got to go with my gut. And looking at this Montreal team and how they've struggled this year, just 2 wins in their first, 10 games? 2 wins in their first 11 games?
Nine games, I think.
They've played nine so far.
I think they're 2-3-4 right now is what I wrote down.
So they're obviously not very good either, you know. And I think this Crew team has shown that they can be good. They have a couple of very good wins and some pretty solid performances that weren't even wins. I think that this Crew team has enough to get a win, but I'm not entirely I'm not feeling very confident in my prediction is the short version of what I'm saying here. I think the Crew are going to take this one 2-1. I feel really kind of dirty and like Alex Stanek saying that, but I think this team has the quality. I think you're going to see a chip on their shoulder from some players in particular. And I think that especially if some of those key cogs actually do play and Berhalter doesn't make 7 changes or something ridiculous like that, I think that this team has enough to get a result. Only because you would expect them to not get a result.
Yeah, I mean, it's MLS. Anything can happen. And certainly on paper, you know, I feel comfortable saying that Columbus is the better team. But, and when you look at that stretch of results you said that are up and down, I mean, for me, that Red Bulls game, nobody wins at Red Bull Arena. You kind of throw that one out the window. I think you look at last night against Toronto, it's a frustrating result. You need to get those points at home, but at the same time, Toronto's the real deal. I think Greg Vanney is underrated as a coach, you know, and the things he does. You know, we saw him make a tactical switch at like the 37th minute.
Yep.
It's like, who does that at the 37th minute? And, you know, he did what I thought Columbus needed to do, which he got more width on the field. But, you know, he's making these decisions. He brings Ricketts in, and lo and behold, you know, 40 minutes later, Ricketts is scoring twice to win the game. I think he manages the big personalities well. I think he works the young guys in well. That Toronto team is a real deal. I don't think there's a lot of shame in putting up a pretty good performance and losing. There, you look at the issues, you say, here are the things we need to correct. But, you know, maybe I'm talking myself into Columbus winning at Montreal. Mostly I'm saying they were inconsistent last year too, and everything felt dire. This year they're inconsistent, and it feels like they're just a step away from putting it together. Sometimes it's hard to put a finger on what the difference is between those things, but they're off to a strong start this season. I'm not worried. I just think it's hard to win on a road. That's it.
And that is a fair assessment. I believe it's the fourth or sixth hardest league in the world to win on the road. And Patrick Murphy had that stat for us recently, and I can't for the life of me remember which number it was. But all that considered, big game. Too early in the season to say must win, but consistency, I think, really is what Crew SC need to start showing. They've shown that they can play some pretty good soccer. They just have to start doing it more often in a row. Josh, thank you for joining us. We'll have to do this again sometime.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate you having me on.
We appreciate your insight and analysis. You can follow him on Twitter at...
@KamikazePilot42.
I never would have remembered that. I'm glad I didn't even try. I am at Chris Landis with a K. You can follow us all and get all of the Crew SC goodness you need at Massive Report. Once again, we want to thank our sponsors, the Land Grant Brewing Company. They've got a couple of new beers coming out in their tap room down in Franklinton. Make sure to go check those out. They're going to be tap room exclusive. And our good friends at the Old North Arcade, they are always a good time. Go beat somebody at NBA Jam because that's always fun. Hi, Matt. Thank you all for joining us. Send us your tweets, questions, thoughts, or just yell at us some more at Massive Report. My name's Chris. He's Josh. Everybody enjoy the game this weekend and stay massive.